Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, October the 13th, 2014. This is our 246 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with our amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And thanks to James, this hour is sponsored by James from North Wales, Pennsylvania. Thank you very much, James, for your support. And hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello, welcome back. Well, we've been talking about electric cars and electricity and zero emissions. And it would be good for the planet Earth to move to a better system of transportation. And I was, Tesla said one of the greatest things about transmitting electricity through the Earth is flying machines, because then they don't have to carry all that flammable liquid that is dangerous to have on board, whether it's a car or an airplane. And I'll start off by saying on the listen page, a newscaster from Montreal on the 2nd of October had a green shiny ball travel in the camera lens behind her. And I saw it on George Filer's files, and I have it posted on the listen page on hour 246. And there's a link there to see it. And, I just recently saw some friends, and, have you seen anything lately? And I said, you mean alien? And Marcy and I said, well, we did see that green shiny ball. I told her about it. And then this just appeared in the news just a couple days later. So I thought, well, it was amazing to see that green shiny ball, and both Marcy and I knew it wasn't from this planet, and I don't know whether they wanted us to see them or they wanted to see us. But we tried to. Now, where did we see that along Route 263? And so we finally said, we both agreed where we saw it, and neither one of us could say anything when it appeared. It, like, all of a sudden appeared in the windshield, not in the windshield, but, above the road. And it was just bouncing along like a bouncing shiny ball. And then it shot into the earth in a way. It shot down at a 45-degree angle rather fast at that point. Did you see that? I said to Marcy, and she said, yeah, I saw. Yes, I did. I'm glad she said she saw it. And it was amazing. And someone saw a green shiny ball go into the Delaware River above Frenchtown a few months later. And here's one in Montreal. Well, people can see what it looks like, but how are you, Michael? We've been talking about electric cars, but
I'm okay. I do have an electric car. And it is zero emission over here on the island, because we do have, we're backfeeding our grid from wind and solar, photovoltaic, all backfeeding. And what electric cars use is much less than is produced by wind and photovoltaic energy. So when we take energy off the grid and charge our vehicle, even though part of it is generated by fossil fuel, mixed with that is wind and solar. So, and the total amount of energy that is pulled out by electric cars is far less than is produced by wind or solar. And that statement of being absolutely clean, as far as clean energy. It's actually true. Electric car driven here on the island of Maui is 100% clean energy.
That's magnificent. Isn't it magnificent?
Yeah, and they're giving it away too. So I don't know how long that will last, but it's a huge investment that is being made by a coalition, a group of industrialists, which includes the island's energy producer and the manufacturers of the car and the electric motor and the charging stations, as well as some other interests, to promote the concept of an electric car as a practical means of transportation. They're watching the people's lives, how they adjust. Just don't go to the service station and fill up your car real quick. It takes on the quick rapid charge stations, it takes about a half an hour to get it up from relatively low.
But that's if you want to fill it up.
Right, if you want to fill. Well, if you just want to go take a real quick zap, it'll get you up in maybe 5 minutes, quickly up to a level which will take you a few miles more, you know, 10 miles more. Mm-hmm. So, and if the stations are real close by, you can just kind of daisy chain your way through. But people have are making, you know, more. It's just seeing it's progressing toward that logarithmic growth curve, and I guess we were early, and there's so many more people are coming on board. All with the Nissan Leaf presently. And tailing behind that are a lot of other companies that are converting their base platform to electric, which what Nissan did was they took a basic platform and shared as many common parts as possible, creating rather than completely building a platform unique to the electric car. Can find versions of the platform with vehicles that are relatively different looking but have the same wheelbase, and that gives away the fact that a lot of the parts are shared. That brings the cost of the car down.
Mm-hmm. Well, Elon Musk, he never built a car before, so he didn't have anything to build from. So he, from the ground up, it was pure electric.
Yeah. Yeah. So his design is a little different because each wheel is driven as a independent power source, you know. So that's a good design. Not the best design, but it's a good design. And one in which puts a lot of the energy where it's used. So you reduce the driveline a lot. So the driveline doesn't have to be as well developed. But since the drivelines are already made by automobile manufacturers, that they just adapted them to the electric motor. Mm-hmm. That, you know, change the power source from a little combustion engine to an electric motor.
You mean a big
AC electric.
A big combustion engine.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to it, there's a lot of empty space inside of the under the hood.
With an electric car, there's a lot of extra space. No cooling system, no radiator, no gas tank, no transmission.
Yeah, I can't find the batteries, too. They hit them real good. They don't take up a lot of obvious space.
Oh.
So that's very interesting. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I think
In the Leaf, and you can't find the batteries?
Well, yeah, because they're hidden, you know, over the axles and stuff like that. So makes the car like real safe too. Mm-hmm. I decided to go and try. They were doing a test on it, if it could perform like a Porsche as far as cornering the G-force.
Yes.
And when they changed the tires to better tires, it equaled the Porsche. So it's actually, because of its low center of gravity, quite sporty. You leave it off of what is called the economy mode or eco mode, and you put it on the normal mode, it has the acceleration of a supercharged engine, because immediately you have full torque. You cannot get that with a turbocharged engine. You have a lag. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely noticeable, because the car just zooms out there. It's just really fast. Top speed-wise, it's not topping out, but on the low end, it really performs just like the best sports cars. And let me tell you, I drive one of the sleeper ones, which is a Jaguar, and it's not a lugger. You know, it's 400 horsepower, so, and supercharged, and it performs right up there with the Jaguar. Hmm. And I don't miss it at all.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things it doesn't have in there that it has to carry around with it, where the internal combustion engine cars. And
yeah, and it also carries a lot of the good stuff. You know, it has a better, smarter braking system, which backfeeds. So if you're kind of like coming downhill and you're riding your brake, you're really not riding your brake pads. You're actually charging your batteries, yeah, where you would on a regular car be just burning out your brakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a movie out, it's probably 10 years old now, but it's Who Killed the Electric Car? And mm-hmm. I've mentioned that before, but that's that is interesting to hear what transpired in California for a while.
And now we're headed right back that way again, in terms of getting to it. The industry wasn't ready. So I was just drawing a parallel between that and the flash drives, little memory car chips that you plug into your computer. But there was, you know, so much RAM and all this other stuff that hard drives and floppy drives that were taking up market share. And to throw that out there a little too soon would have upset the market. So they made sure that they had cooperation, and they turned it out later so that now you don't see the market of hard drives and extra external drives that are as common as people running around with their little jump drives or flash drives, whatever you want to nickname them. But they're basically a three-dimensional matrix that embeds data into crystal, tremendous amount of data. And that is something like what happened with the electric car. It was a little too soon. It destroyed marketplace. Presently, we are on the edge, because of things like Fukushima, the nuclear power plants will not go away, but what will take their place is something that actually uses the spent fuel as fuel. So we'll end up burning up all the stored fuel. This was known, that some of this stored fuel, this spent fuel, which is considered dangerous, is actually fuel for the molten salt reactor, nuclear reactors. So when you're looking at cleaning up a planet, the Saharans were advising me that we are on a page of turning our technology around and using it to clean itself. It's very interesting how these things were turned away simply because we are afraid of ourselves. This is a terror, which is fear, which is one of a powerful motivating force for civilization. is going to be removed. When fear is removed, then we can think intelligently. Imagine moving away from nuclear power, which is essentially power which is generated primarily for the energy, secondarily, that you could make nuclear bombs with enriching uranium, enriching fissionable material with these types of reactors, and moving away to one which is totally clean. And the remnants of the nuclear material in the cold molten salt would be nothing but a small golf ball size piece that is nearly inert, that could be held in your hand without any problem. This is the level of technology that we are moving toward, you know. So I'm glad I at least could participate in part of it, which is the electric car revolution. And no longer is it killed when in early stages it was fought off by the oil industry. The oil industry, however, which is tied very closely with the dollar, which is a finance that makes global energy economy move around, all of that is dissolving rapidly before the eyes of the American people who are running the country, bankers especially, and they're not sure exactly what's going to happen. But according to what the Sharoons have given me insight to, we have enough intelligence that we can actually turn this planet into a wonderful paradise. All we need to do is remove fear. Yet there are sources on our planet that are instigating this and are working strongly against our own good. These are basically the anti-aliens, you might say. These anti-beings are many who claim possession of this planet, but were essentially not part of the universe of sentient beings who are aligned under the First Source and Center's original plan. They broke away, and they still remain, causing trouble and confusion. Although the top leaders were removed, the legacy, you might say, after effects of them still remain. That's a human problem. And as a human problem, it has a lot to do with tradition. But believe it or not, there's a lot of repeats that go along with these types of terroristic activity and instability in the planet, trying to fight off the powers that be, and much of it being the economic forces.
Yeah, well, they had electric cars in New York City, which is a city close to me, up until the 50s. There were still electric cars, and women loved them because they were quiet, and they didn't have to crank them to start them. And there's 14,000 taxi cabs in New York City, and just having zero pollution from that many vehicles would help. I mean, when I lived on Oahu, I knew all the pollution from the cars just blew off the island. But here on the mainland, some places it hangs around, like Los Angeles, and people are told to stay inside because the pollution is so bad. And so we desperately need to change, even if it's happening slowly. But I'm really thrilled the electric cars are starting to take shape in this country, and it's just not going to happen like overnight to get rid of these gas cars. It probably take decades, but and the price of gas will probably come down as the electric cars go up. Because that'll keep people still wanting to drive their gas cars. They like that vroom vroom sound. What is it?
Actually, I don't really enjoy that. I remember being at the in the New Jerusalem asking my graduate guide about, can you rev it up? The front of like regulator areas. I wanted to see a change or something happen because it just was there. It was the energy regulator powering the entire New Jerusalem. That is a magnificent sphere out there at Saturn. Magnificent, absolutely unbelievable. And the technologies are so far beyond what we can understand. We're basically sticks and stones in comparison to that. But to move ourselves to that level, it's not going to be something that is easily done, because it is not just plugging in a different battery, different brand of battery. Okay, we're going from batteries that last, your flashlight battery lasted whatever, a few hours when you leave your battery on, to one that lasts a few days or something like that. It's not that way. It's not the power source. Could, it's very different. It's actually not electricity in its pure form. And living energy, it's like living energy. There's a tremendous difference between, a living being gathering life energy. And then, of course, you look at life energy as a mechanism of life, and we can kind of say, okay, well, it's getting life energy through the various energy motives, basically oxygen, carbon dioxide. Well, that means there's some kind of combustion going on within the human body or within a living body or an organism. Well, it's very sophisticated. The life energies, which are able to metabolize or use the energy streams of energy, are very different from our understanding of conversion of energy to other sources. So it will require converters in our grid, and a power grid would have to be converted, and that would have to require us to first of all understand some of what is there in terms of the waves of energy that are actually propagating right through our planet right now and are usable in some of its form, and we gradually move ahead. To what level we will move toward is dependent upon ourselves, our planetary consciousness. If we are purely driven under a profit motive, then we'll have the same kind of problems we have right now with the, oil industry, internal combustion, fossil fuel concept, which is tied closely right back to a fiat currency that is basically worth nothing, which is presently the US dollar. They want to move that to some other form of fiat currency, which is also going to be tied to energy, and you end up with the same problem. It's tied to some form of energy. Until we get off of that profit-driven mentality or modality, that paradigm of chasing your tail around continuously, we could not bear free energy very well, because there will be other failings that would come about structurally in terms of the economic structure, failings that would have repercussions almost like a dominoes effect. So this has to be carefully orchestrated.
Well,
So
it can happen slowly as long as
that's what I was saying.
yeah, just have it happen slowly.
Well, that's what's happening right now. That's what I was saying initially.
Exactly.
And what was absolutely rejected, absolutely, every nickel penny was removed out of the molten salt research in terms of nuclear reactors for energy development. Mm-hmm. That is the young ones, the young, smart, genius kids, these kids that are just very, very bright, you know, perfect SAT scores. I mean, these guys are just brilliant. And their whole thing is not to get rich. At one time, you know, people were saying, oh, I'll get into this career because, you know, this is what their pay scales are. And it says, I don't care about that. Because what happened was they began to look at their parents or those that are around them who are in such a rut, this rut system, chasing their tails to supposedly get a life that is better, and realizing that their life wasn't better. It wasn't better at all. And they were focused and realizing now that just the idea of how much money you make is not enough, is not the right way. And this is what I came into discussion with one individual who was younger than I, was in the same field as I am in. And in that, he replied, in terms of a very similar discussion to technology, was that it's not about money anymore. It's about bettering the planet. And that shift in consciousness, planetary consciousness, is essential. One nickel, one dime, one penny that is thrown into the mix could destroy this very balance. So it has to be done for the betterment of the planet without fear of some kind of retaliation. And this is where many of the free energy guys, Meyer in his direct injected water system, in other words, he had a combustion engine burning hydrogen. He cracked hydrogen into two of its, I mean, cracked water into two of its most, you know, basically rocket fuel. And was able to run his Volkswagen, internal combustion engine, on using a plasma type energy that was able to crack on as needed water into hydrogen and oxygen in its, and then reconvert it in burning to water, which came out the tailpipe, essentially left very safe emission steam. Mm-hmm. You know,
Stan steam. Myers.
Yeah, and he's dead. I know he was removed by those that would remove even the president of the United States if they threatened their industry. Because they have, you know, it's going back a long, long, long time ago. This is all being repeated. It's all repeated. You know, in Japan, I come from a long line of distinguished people. They were called the samurai of Japan. But they go back to, all the way back to the Middle East. And they were part of the lost Israeli tribes that had the Torah, had the holy book, and they guarded any imperial or a type of royalty which was brought into the concept of having a genetic line which is near God, godlike. And this goes back, and in your Yerusha book basically does confirm the idea that there was a mixing of genetics to upscale the human population. But anyway, these groups, which had a loyalty to protect, actually journeyed back to Japan and became known more famously to Japan as the samurai. Well, they found the country unified at one point, about 1600, end wars. They were tired of war. They didn't want any more war. War was just one of the problems of bringing civilization up to a point of unifying it so there would be no more fighting. Well, they kept peace from 1600, 1700 to 1800, to about 1870 or something like that. Basically, 1868 became a period of very, very continual peace. And when the American industrialists came in and wanted to open up Japan to trade, they saw them, the peacekeepers, as troublemakers, as people who would not allow the country to become industrialized, because they essentially felt that the destabilization of the internal marketplace would, you know, cause trouble. You know, they did. They wanted it to be in a pattern that would retain a peaceful development and not enslave people to the banking system, which would be prey to the weaknesses of human character, which they were well aware of. The disciplines that were required for attaining the level of discipline and self-development, which were part of the samurai character, was totally opposite of what was being sold to the development of industry in Japan. Well, in any case, if anyone wants to know what happened in the repeat of it, the loss or the of this noble characteristic of chivalry was documented in a movie called The Last Samurai. The Last Samurai is fairly close to the truth, and it does show how this is continued throughout the ages of various ways in which the economic and the banking system and the forces that try to unify the planet under this enslavement concept, under the orchestration of at one time prince of the planet. The planetary prince of this planet is a spiritual being of high order. On the New Jerusalem, I met a higher being, one of a more pure character, who told me the purpose of life. A level order just below him, a being of light, spiritual being, are an order of those that Lucifer came from and a planetary prince came from. Planetary prince that fell under service with Lucifer and Satan was called Kaligastia. He implemented a financial system, a monetary system, to rule the planet with, and it still remains. It is an instrument and tool that has been used, not necessarily by him, by those that still follow in allegiance to the old ways, the ways that are actually forbidden because of the same realization of the weakness of human character, greed, and many of these that ignore the good for all and do not recognize the brotherhood of others. And this term was hated. This way of doing things was hated by the samurai. By the way, samurai means to serve, to put oneself less than, to serve others, even so much as to serve one's life for the benefit of another, for a group. And this is an attitude which was hated by these, because fear couldn't come in. Fear couldn't be used as a tool. Greed couldn't be used as a tool. All of these low human characteristics couldn't be used as a tool against the samurai. And I see it always being used over and over again. Now you look at the planet as still trying to shift gears, but it's getting closer to a point where it will shift gears to a more righteous way of governance, which would ignore moving into the control characteristics of greed and fear, being tooled and moved and manipulated under those orchestrations by these fallen higher spirits, spiritual beings, and they're real. I mean, I actually had a conversation with them. And this is something that remains. And this is one of the things that my purpose was to bring back to the planet, the understanding that there is a more excellent way. And we've just got to be able to look beyond the veil of the mystery of our own fragile weaknesses. This has a lot to do with our own penetration of the seven psychic circles of spiritual, psychic, or cosmic development. This starts out at a point of desiring truth, the first source and center, to know the truth. And then we penetrate that by moving past the veil of human weaknesses or the animal nature, which, you know, would like to dissolve the base mortal needs. The base mortal needs are many times the tools that are manipulated at a low level by these orchestrators of the nefarious mechanisms of leading the planet the wrong way. So many times the guardians of our destiny have to balance carefully between the insertion of truth at the right time so that it will not self-destruct. In other words, be either dissolved away, such as by those that do not want it to progress. And then, more dangerously, such truth be dissolved to a point where it is no longer called truth, but called a lie. This is something that is very, very dangerous. So they want, celestial friends want to produce truth, but at a point which we are ready to hear it and to use it. So now we've got to progress past the fear. And this is still one of the things that, you know, I go through my travels, just ordinary air traffic, got to go through this fear thing. Oh, we're saving you, because who's fearful of who? It shows you that the real fear is the fear of just ordinary people going through these TSA lines and magnetometers and basically X-ray devices, not necessarily X-ray, but other, still a device that uses radiation, electromagnetic radiation. All of that motivated by fear. Fear and control. These mechanisms limit our ability to move to the next level.
Exactly.
And we need to see past that. So, and they see every little, you know, like this tweet was there, and it offered me a capacity to move past a combustion engine into an electric engine. I've envisioned it as my golf cart, you know, because that was the closest thing to an electric car. It's a golf cart.
Golf carts.
You know, and yeah, golf carts. And I was thinking, my, if we could just have a golf cart. And I know that, and I was thinking, I know this thought is not my own. It has been seeded into my consciousness by the Shaharuns, by my guardians, who want me to move that direction to present an example. And, you know, I do have, like I say, gas guzzlers or luxury vehicles or, you know, other things like that. But it is my favorite vehicle, you know.
That says a lot.
Yeah.
It says a lot.
It is so quiet. I mean, you get into, I remember, you know, having noisy, you know, high compression engines. That's part of, you know, part of the experience, but it's such a short-lived experience where you want to feel the experience of moving around your hot rod car, you know, but going past that, you just don't want that. You just want that beautiful quiet and smoothness and absolute, like, it's like riding the levitator disc running around in New Jerusalem, or just like, You don't feel like a skateboard. You just feel like, wow, it's pretty cool. You're just moving down the walkway or whatever this grand spiral causeway, which is what Riley Martin called it. But it's actually really wide, huge, like a 4, 5, 6 lane highway, and it's just maybe even wider in some places. And it's just you. It's you and times it never seemed ever to get crowded, but there were times in which I saw thousands of people moving on it. It just happened real quick, and they're all running around on levitators. Others actually were walking. There's all times that people walk on it, but levitators just like no sound, nothing. It's quiet, moving along, and the electric car seems to remind me of that. We're moving in that direction, at least, where we will be coming more and more toward a very clean, quiet, smooth thing. Very safe, no accidents. When I'm talking about the levitator disc, I think some of those levitators may have been used at one time. Maybe that's where the idea is. They literally put a carpet on top of it, a levitator disc, and were able to ride it. And that's where the idea of magic carpets came from, because they were functional. These people were using it. Now, later were removed, but, you know, we couldn't back engineer it. But it's very interesting. They'll be feeding us as much as possible. But it still endangers us. It's sort of like, I don't want to give, one time I had a friend, I have a friend in Cambodia, and I thought I'd do him good, and I'd say, you know, he was riding a broken down scooter. And basically, it was barely running. So I thought I'd send him some money, buy him a new one. So I did. But he made it known to some people around him that he got him that through a friend in the United States. And pretty soon, things began to happen in his life that were very, very bad. And it was almost as if he was forced to keep asking for more money, more money. And it was to a point where he lost his wife. The very same water scooter that he bought ended up being a way which he got into an accident. It hurt her, and it was almost as if it was multiplied negatively to become better if they never had a dime from me because of all the negative that ended up. But later, you know, he was able to have a house of his own, but the idea was that he didn't have his wife anymore. She died. She just didn't want to live. She just, after the accident, just almost like gave up living. And this is sometimes the fear that we are not able to bear certain gifts. And these gifts are not necessarily going to be given at a time which we can bear them. Some of the things that I remember were wished for from a very, very long time ago. And then now they come out. But I can see what would have happened in retrospect if I had had them earlier. And that would have changed the direction in my life to a point where those things that I know would not have been able to be shared with this and other mediums, technological mediums, that would make the knowledge that brings back the ancient truths and ties them with modern technology, science, and reality of our being today, running around society today, that can sort through the ancient truths that were seeded by you might say our guardians through prophets, through teachers of higher knowledge, so that our planet could be adjusted and balanced toward its primary goal. And when we look at that primary goal and do not lose sight of it, the planet's balance will change. Right now, that primary goal is not even known by much of the planet. Their primary goal is that every human being, every life organism, from the most primal, basic, single-celled amoeba, whatever, slime, ooze, whatever, all the way up to basically the human being on this planet, was for the purpose that the human being would be able to be a repository of a soul to be developed toward infinite life, toward us in a process of ascension. It is all of life is basically scaffolding, a structure needed to build a immensely important, unique being, which is the human soul, the human being himself, minus the body. The mortal structure is but scaffolding that would be removed. You know, you see buildings being built with a lot of scaffolding, right, Curtis?
Yeah,
you see
exactly, all that? Right.
And it looks ugly. I mean, it looks flimsy. It looks, oh my goodness. You know, if that stays up there, it'd be a horrible sight forever. Mm-hmm. And then when it's finished, all the scaffolding comes down and the architect's dream is made open to everyone's eyes to see. And for the most part, it's beautiful, much more beautiful, and much more long-lasting than the scaffolding that comes down. And our lives and all the structure about this mortal life, even the human, even all the living life about us, you know, in the forest, trees, the ocean, all this wonderful stuff, it was all for the purpose of the ascension of the human being to become a being of light, a being of eternal life character, to populate the universe with absolutely infinite life. And that is something that has been hidden, actually, from the human race, from the beginning. Without it, how could you throw fear into the picture? You know, if you have that knowledge that all of this is for that purpose, And fear would diminish. Brotherhood would immediately take a whole different role, I guess, in society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people would realize, wait, we're here temporarily, but not to gather the loose things of more scaffolding material about us. That's not it. You know, it's to get that final product. And there's a staging that is required, and there is, you know, what is described as a penetration into realms of development and awareness. And as we make these moves, we begin to shed a lot of the weight, you might say, of mortal life. And what opens our consciousness is that we see a perspective much different than one in which the domain of our lives are limited to. In terms of growth, it makes the universe seem more much smaller. In terms of what I'm saying by smaller is because it is not limiting us from reaching out to and interacting with the others that are within the domain of the universe of sentient beings. That whole, you know, embrace is ready right out there to give us this wonderful embrace. And this is what motivates an individual as he ascends. You think these, I used to, you know, as a Christian minister, we basically taught from the Paulian, from the Paul's teaching of the New Testament, because he wrote a good chunk of it. And even some of the Hebraic stuff that moves through the New Testament, there's this idea of if people don't know this one basic truth, they don't know nothing, their religion leads them the wrong way. But actually, the truth is that it's always been poured out to the human population, the human reality. It's the discovery and the way in which people manipulate it to the point where there are some whose journey into these levels of executing divinity attainment on planet can be very different in their the method of attainment, but the end result is that they ultimately find themselves in the same spot. And this is where people who go to the mystics and out there and have not yet attained their level, where the mystics have, whether it be Buddhist monks someplace in the way up in the mountains or whatever, meditating. Or once they attain, whether it's outside of this or not, there is this bond that happens, there's this knowing, and once that knowing comes into position with, you know, with others who could, by very different methods, come to that same spot, same place, will find that, is there an easier way? I remember looking at and being able to answer this to some person who spent a lot of time meditating. And they want that. And I said, that is good. But you don't need to go to do it. You can do this continual embrace or to embrace divinity because it's within you. It's not in some locality way away from everything. You know, it's within you in the most tight spots in terms of congestion of people in the city, in business, and streets, honking of horns. And it doesn't matter. Because if you have embraced divinity within yourself and begin to squeeze, you might say. And when you begin to squeeze, you use what you have. You know when you do a hug, Curtis?
Yeah.
We use what we have, basically our arms, our muscles and stuff. And we squeeze, right? Mm-hmm. And we put a person that we love and we cherish and we squeeze them. Okay, this squeezing motion is induces good things to a person receiving the hug. Because it implies security, implies many things that are actually good from, you know, for a baby, because he used to swaddle the baby so the baby wouldn't be so crybaby, you know, always, you know, not you swaddle the baby seems more happy. Well, this embrace, if we try to mimic it, but not with our physical arms, and in the actual embrace is with our spiritual arms, you might say, and we can use the figuratively, the very picture of using our physical arms to embrace divinity that is already within us with this love and assurance, we'll be able to get back the very similar energies of the love embrace, and that embrace is back. And this relationship builds over and over and over. Some people think that they have to sit in the lotus position to get that embrace. You don't need to. You can walk. Just you walk in the street, talk to somebody. But if you carry this with you all the time, it'll be very active in your life. That closeness. Now, when you attain this first circle, this innermost circle, you have this living embrace that's continuously there. And sometimes you will be able to touch someone who is just ready, and they'll love that touch from you because it flows into them living life energy because of that. And this is a characteristic of a person who has attained deeper or closer to the first circle, from seven circles out, coming all the way in to that developmental point. And an actual real healing can happen. And this is an amazing thing to me, that we become conduits for that. And that's what our real purpose is. And we find ourselves paired off, maybe even partnered with other celestial beings who are going to help us in our lives in arranging the proper time and the proper gifts. There is no good thing that will be withheld from us. It is those things which are dangerous. If I knew that buying that little motor scooter would wind up with this terrible, you know, it was a terrible picture, because it, when I gave that motor scooter to this poor guy in Cambodia, and it didn't make his life better. It made all the weaknesses of his character multiplied. Went out to money lenders, which are nothing more than loan sharks. And then the loan sharks would put out other dangerous signals, so that I began to realize that they were forcing, squeezing as much money out of him because they knew he had a source other than himself. Hmm. And they wanted that source, but they had to use him. So they would bring hardship and need into his life and to squeeze more money. And it would be, I would see that. And it took over 2 or 3 years of this continuous squeezing and me holding back, trying to instruct him about all of the things I'm teaching here and seeing where he wanted, where he would come to a point of realization. And he did eventually. And he moved on, realizing that the answer for his life wasn't the money that I was giving him, but the words that I was teaching him. And eventually he broke free, but it was a lesson to me of human weakness. So some things have to be withheld. Even though we think it's a good thing, it's not. It's a kind of a bitter lesson for me to learn.
An amazing thing to learn. Sorry it turned out that way.
Yeah. Yeah, you think you could just, buy him a little motor scooter. It might help him out a little bit, you know, but it turned out to be the worst thing I could ever do.
Hmm. Yeah, it took him out of the unit he was in, the group he was in.
Yeah, and I realized, having been there in Cambodia, the amount of corruption. You know, the people's character there are very different. You know, Pol Pot, yes. When he allowed all of his people under him to do what they wanted to do. Basically to get rid of, erase modern society, modern science, educated people. They were the targets, you know, the engineers, the teachers, the doctors, the good the people that make modern society work. Well, the people that had that chance to ruin the lives of these teachers, and they're still in society, but they became the corrupted ones who found out how to use power, one form or another, to scratch basically money out of people. And that also, you know, corrupt ones. You know, you gotta use bribes, you gotta use this or other factors, and it wasn't nice. Oh. Yeah. So although there are countries like Japan and others that want to help improve the country, there are tremendous negative forces still swirling around in their culture that would prevent, prevent its growth of a good economy.
Are those the anti-aliens?
The anti-aliens, yeah, they are there. Mm-hmm. To find their place in areas where there's confusion and where there is instability, and they have no place in places like the New Jerusalem. They wouldn't be forbidden to enter there. But once they're there, they find that they have no place. They actually are probably figure they have more excitement destroying things than building things. I remember the video game I never saw video games like this before, but they're common right now on our smartphones and things like that. But he was carrying around a little, my graduate guy was carrying around a little thing. He had it like almost like not real, like a slip of paper in his pocket, or if he had a pocket, I don't know. But he got it out of what seemed like nothing, nowhere. And he was playing with it. I was wondering, what is this thing he's doing? So I looked at it and said, what are you doing? I says, oh, this is a game. And it looks hard to do because it's not like, you know, like playing solitaire or something with cards. It was very, you know, on a lively screen touch. And we're doing all of that right now, you know, touch screen stuff and all that, and the video games. But what was interesting, what the point I want to make about this game was you had to build. You didn't destroy. You didn't shoot things and blow them up. What was happening was you had to build, and there would be space. But if you didn't build fast enough, you didn't have any more space. So you had to, you know, go find space and build again. And it's almost like the idea that was being shown there was the universe is infinitely expanding, and there's always space to build even more. But while we have space, we need to build. So it's almost like while we have life, we have to live it. We can't, you know, limit it, because then we'll run out of it, and then we got to find someplace else. And this is something that that game was doing. And I the reason I know about that game was I was taught how to play it, and I told my guide that I said, "Oh, this is, I'm not going to be as good as you. You do it really, really fast." And he says, "Oh, don't worry, you get it. You know, just continue connecting the bars, connect the bars. You know, so I connect the bar. He said, "Don't matter how you do it, just keep trying." So I kept trying. Oh, it's all closed up already. I can't go nowhere. He says, "Oh, it's." Yeah, you sweep it off and you find another spot. Try again, you know. And it was build, you know, very different from shoot, destroy, you know, bang. Blow things up, break things, smash things. Very different. It was build. And, yeah.
A much better attitude. My gosh, much more productive.
I think so, you know, very much more. But it was a video game, yeah.
Yeah, well, this killing and destroying and destruction is not positive. It's almost like, you know, who made this up, Lucifer?
Yeah, that's he's had another name, the Son of the Morning, the Bright Star. You get all these nice names, but he really ended up screwing over a lot of people and nearly destroying the very purpose of life on our planet. And it is only because I didn't want to live anymore, and I said, "It's got to be more to this crazy life than this." I screamed out to heaven, make God just make himself real, or send a representative or something. And that is the fulfillment, which Tananella came and picked me up. Beautiful star, moved out of its place. It didn't have the look of that blue, was it green orb? It was like a star. Beautiful star.
Well,
I suspect that the green orb and things like that are more like probes. Yeah, they're not manned ships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where this beautiful star was a manned craft, but in its different modalities, when it luminesced, it could luminesce and become a beautiful white star. Yeah. And then get invited to learn how things work with them. This is an interesting thing.
I'll say.
Yeah.
I'll say it was an interesting thing.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. I'm glad you went. What if you said no?
They wouldn't. They would say fine. They wouldn't. There's no abduction thing. You're coming with us whether you like it or not. No, no, mm-hmm. no. I invited them and they came and it was, would you just make some checks on you? So there were some physical things they did. And they looked inside and made sure everything was okay. And that was okay. And I went and experienced and found. And the most important thing I found was the purpose of life from their point of view. From being an eternal being, what is the purpose of life on planet Earth, planet Urantia? What is it? And it was intercepted. It looks absolutely like we're you know, enslaved to mortality, and we just gotta find a way to beat it. But there's no way. It's not that. We've got to realize that mortality is a scaffolding built around what we have to build, which is our divinity relationship and becoming a divine being. And we'll have a lot of help once we do make that commitment to go ahead and structure our lives in a way which takes our scaffolding, which is our mortal being in our lives every day, to connect and build the divine soul around and with embrace, and then receive from our own embrace of toward divinity the actual embrace from divinity. And as the squeeze gets tighter, then the fusion experience happens. People wonder about this fusion experience and say, what is this fusion experience? Well, it's when the squeeze completes itself. But prior to that, we don't have to complete itself because there is a lot that needs to be finished, you might say, in terms of our character, even if we have ascended and made all the circles and have become beings that actually embrace divinity. And divinity embraces back. And this reciprocity, moving back and forth, oscillates to a point in which becomes light. And that is fusion. Hmm. Yeah. But it starts at a low level. And that low level is one in which our mental state, our physical state oscillate at, vibrate at a lower level. And at that level, we move. And then we, as the embrace tightens, you might say we begin to, it's almost like you start, if you were going, somebody squeezes you, you go, ah, you know, you kind of get, kind of the vibration moves up. But there's a point in which it becomes light. That is fusion.
Well, this has been a beautiful time with you tonight, today, yeah. Michael.
Yeah.
Once again, this is really nice to hear. Really nice to hear that we are slowly building and someday mm-hmm. remove our scaffolding.
Yeah, remove that light. Yeah, it'll be looked back upon as, yuck, that's stuff I don't want, I don't need anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we can always regress to looking that way if we want to. And maybe many times need to in our service, because one of the characteristics is to be samurai, to be served, to serve, to have a life of true service.
Mm. Well, thank you for this wonderful recording, and we'll get to Nedim's question about the adjuster fusion next time,
mm-hmm.
and read Millie's comments about the hour, and get to Randall's question. next time. And so until then, thank you very much. And it was wonderful talking and listening. And we'll talk with you next week.
Okay, aloha.
All right, aloha.